everyone. I'm Scott.
Hello, I'm Julie.
And this is a Good Story is Hard to Find podcast,
where two Catholic friends talk about the books and movies they love and the traces of the one reality they see underneath.
That's right. And this is episode number 41.
Wow.
Yeah. And we're going to talk about a movie called To Be or Not to Be.
That is the question.
That is the question. It stars Carol Lombard and Jack Benny. And apparently it's been remade by Mel Brooks, a version I have not seen.
And Anne Bancroft, I think.
Okay.
Who's his wife.
Is okay.
I mean, really, gotcha. His wife. And his wife. Well, yeah, and it's funny because anybody who knows of Jack Benny, and I think he's still fairly iconic as an entertainer in our culture, doesn't think of him being in a movie. When this movie was recommended, Rose recommended it, and I'd always heard, this is a movie you should see, this is the version, the original one, and I thought, Jack Benny, and I was surprised at what a wonderful actor he was in this.
Yeah, he was tremendous.
Yeah, he really was. He wasn't hamming it up.
Yeah.
It was subtle.
Yeah, he's not the Jack Benny that I knew.
Right, from the TV show, or if you've heard radio clips, that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's a persona.
Yeah. And this movie, which I guess we're getting ahead, but I'll stop in a minute, but this director was very well known at the time, very famous. It's as if Christopher Nolan or Quentin Tarantino wrote a movie for you. He wrote this part for Jack Benny.
How about that?
Yeah, who was so honored. He just, oh, yes, I'll do it, you know. So.
Wow. Well, neat.
Anyway, so let's see. It's a comedy. It's from 1942, I believe.
Yeah, and that's what
so what we tend to forget is that World War II was going on at the time. No one knew how it was turning out. And this was... And
about halfway through the movie, I was like, wow, this came out in 1942.
Yeah.
I can only imagine, you know, so what had happened by then? You know, Poland had been invaded, and the movie does take place in Poland.
It's about a troupe of actors who are Polish in Warsaw, right? It starts right before the Germans invade. And then the rest of it happens while the Germans are in power. And the main characters, as we said, are Jack Benny and Carol Lombard play the main actors in this acting troupe at this theater. And they'll do all kinds of different plays. But the one that the husband is most proud of is his Hamlet. And the wife has various young male admirers who she enjoys hearing from. And it's not that she's ever playing around behind his back. She just seems to enjoy spending time with them. It's, you don't ever get the feeling she's truly unfaithful to him.
Right.
And so what she'll tell one is, well, come backstage when it's time for the soliloquy, to be or not to be. So that's part of where the title comes from.
Yep.
And what happens is her latest admirer is a young Polish Air Force flyer, I believe, because he flies a bomber. And after Poland is invaded, he goes to England. And at that point, it turns from being strictly a comedy into being kind of also underneath a thriller, because it turns into kind of a spy story of somebody's trying to discover who the Polish underground is, and this acting troupe has the ability to stop them from finding out.
Yeah, it's almost like a heist story, almost. You know, little intricate people pulling off roles and things, you know, to get things to happen. So it's almost
impersonating
a heist.
Other people. And then, now, wait, my computer's saying there's an internet connection problem.
I'm still hearing you fine.
Okay. Well, then never mind. Sorry.
No problem.
Yeah. So but at the same time, it is still a comedy. So it's really, really well done in terms of halfway through the movie, you're sitting there, or at least I was the first time I saw it, on the edge of my seat going, oh, no, these people don't know this. And this just happened. And, you could see it's going to be very bad. Yeah. But it's still a comedy on the surface.
Yeah, excellent script. Really good script.
Yeah, really intricate. So you're invested in these characters. And at the same time, you're just laughing over all these quick one-liners and the situations they're in. Mm-hmm. And because it's a movie about World War II, while World War II is happening, you can appreciate the satire because at the same time, this script is just skewering different characters. Hitler.
Yeah.
Specifically.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can imagine this being uncomfortable territory in 1942.
When
the movie came out, I wonder,
horrible.
The reviews were horrible. Oh.
Yeah, because, for one thing, Jack Benny had his father go see the premiere, and his father stood up at one point and said, "I will not see a son of mine in a German uniform," and he walked out. And Jack Benny had to plead with his father, no, watch to the end and get him back in the theater. He wound up loving it. But other people like, I was looking around for background information and inadvertently clicked on the New York Times 1942 movie review that they had in their archives.
Mm-hmm.
And it just lambasted this.
Really?
It's heavy-handed. It's in terrible taste. You know, it's making fun of the Poles. Here they've been invaded, and this thing is making fun of them. Hmm. And there's a line that is now famous, I believe, because Jack Benny's always asking for praise, you know, perhaps because everybody's heard of his wife, Maria Tura. Mm-hmm. Perhaps you've heard of her husband, the famous actor Joseph Tura, he'll say.
Yeah.
And they'll say, "Oh, yes, I saw his Hamlet once. What he did to Shakespeare, we are now doing to Poland," says this German. And you just sit there going, "Oh, did they say that then? I guess they did." And people were quoting that line and just being horrified by it and outraged. And now, of course, you look at it and it's brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so it's interesting. And also, it had unfortunate timing because Carol Lombard, this was her last role. She died in an airplane accident soon after.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. And in fact, there's a lot. Well, I guess we're not really in spoiler territory. At one point, she says, "Well, what could happen in an airplane?" Mm. And they took that out. It's now back. But they took it out because it seemed so tasteless.
Uh-huh. Well, did she die, really quickly after? Oh, wow. She died in 1942.
Yeah.
So before the movie was released. So right. she was done filming, but it hadn't been released. Wow. Mm. Yeah, I did not know that.
And it seems like there was a third circumstance. I'm trying to think if I can remember what it was. But, well, I guess this is all stuff for once we start spoilers, which could be in a minute, because that's kind of the essence of the movie. Did I leave something out? Or
No, that's really the essence of the movie. Yeah, so yeah, this acting troupe is there, and they've decided to try to figure out how to get out of Poland, right? And that's kind of the point of the heist from then on. You know, they're pretending to be people they're not to try to get out of there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's one of these things where you could almost see it put on as a play because there are a lot of people coming and going from different rooms, sometimes disguised, sometimes not disguised. You know what everybody's going for, but because the other characters like the Nazis or whoever that they're talking to don't, there are all these double entendres. And I was so impressed when I saw it at what a subtle actress Carol Lombard was.
Mm.
I mean, something would happen and she would just stiffen very slightly and give a little sideways look. And you suddenly knew everything that was going through her mind because you knew everything she knew. And then she'd just go right on. It was really an eye opener to me about her because I don't know if I've seen her in anything else.
Yeah, I think this was the first time I've seen her too.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm sad that she died in the plane wreck.
I know. Well, and that was supposedly the thing that broke Clark Gable's heart because they were married.
Ah, I see.
You know?
Yeah.
And he actually had begged her not to take the part.
Really?
It was written for a different actress, and she could not get along with Jack Benny, so she quit. Mm. And Carol Lombard heard about it and begged to be allowed to try out for it because this actor was so famous that she really wanted to work with him.
Wow, how about that?
He begged her not to take it, I guess because he'd seen the script, you know, and knew it would be controversial.
Hmm.
And it's funny because we watched Casablanca the weekend before because we were just at home and said, well, let's watch one of these mini movies we have. And we hadn't seen it for a long time. And that's another one that you don't realize until you're looking at the history of it that was filmed before they knew what was going to happen during World War II, which yeah. gives the whole story about fighting the Nazis a whole different emphasis. And the point of the movie suddenly becomes more immediate, you know?
Yeah.
And it's kind of that way with this.
Yeah, it was. That's what struck me, you know, about halfway through. I was thinking, you know, wow, they really, they don't have any idea how this is going to end up. And yeah, we had just started in the war when they were filming it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the United States, I mean. But yeah, what a time. What a time. But I could certainly see how, you know, the movie opens with Hitler walking around a neighborhood.
And, oh, yeah, which is spoiler territory.
Okay, sure. Yep, yeah, here we are. So. But the but yeah, it opens with that. And I can just imagine people, you know, is there a movie that we can even liken it to? And the only thing that I could think of, you remember that movie Hot Shots with, what's his name? Charlie Sheen. It was, you know, the movies, you know, Airplane and those Leslie Nielsen crazy comedies.
Yeah, that was the one, it was making fun of Tom Cruise's movie, right?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, yes, Saddam Hussein was in it and, you know.
Right, it was really funny.
They were skewering him. You know, it was funny in that crazy Airplane type of a way.
Yeah, it's very broad comedy.
Yeah.
Very broad. Right. And it was really well done.
Yeah, so,
Or Borat, maybe?
Borat, I haven't seen.
Well, see, I haven't seen it, but when I was trying to think of similar movies that offended people because of their content that maybe later people might not think were so offensive, I don't know.
Yeah.
That's one that came to mind, and then I thought I need to look it up and see what it was about. But see, this isn't broad comedy. That's the difference. It's very sophisticated.
Yeah, and you did mention that, you know, it could be a stage play, and you know, it would probably maybe it exists as a stage play because I was thinking the same thing. It felt like a stage play to me. And one of the interesting things is that right before this, Jack Benny did Charlie's Aunt, which is a famous stage play.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah. And then after this, Jack Benny did George Washington Slept Here, which is a play that we've done here in at our playhouse.
Okay.
So it's another kind of a famous play. So, that was interesting. So I expected this to be another one of the same type, but you know, to know that the director wrote this, for Jack Benny.
And he was a German Jew.
Yeah.
He was making a really clear point because he was, responding to the different criticisms and he kept saying, look, I am not making fun of the Poles. I'm not, you know, I am skewering these people for a reason. And part of the problem was that there was a twofold problem in that Hollywood at the time, and I didn't realize this, Rose was telling me there's a documentary called The Holocaust in Hollywood or something like that. And this movie's mentioned in it. But basically, there was so much anti-Semitism in America still at the time that they didn't like to call a lot of attention to the fact that most of the people running the big studios or doing a lot of these movies were Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
And so whenever you see movies that were shot then, they won't use the word Jew or Jewish, or they'll kind of soft pedal any references to Hitler. And that was kind of a gentleman's agreement. They weren't going to really go after Hitler because they didn't want people turning around and going, why do you care so much? And that's a foreign way of thinking in a sense. And but I was reading about this and it says like, you know, Greenberg, the one who his big ambition is to play Shylock.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There, I didn't think about it, but he constantly gives that speech from The Merchant of Venice of, you know, if you prick us, do we not bleed?
Mm-hmm.
But the word Jew is in that speech.
And oh, really?
It's not, in the part that he says, and it's not in what he says.
Wow.
They specifically don't use it.
They left it out.
Yeah.
How about that?
And he was really cautious about it. So it's just, that's kind of an interesting point that he was so pointedly skewering this, and everybody knew why. And in fact, something else I saw was when war breaks out, and I don't remember seeing this in the cut that we had. It says, maybe I just wasn't looking at that point because I was also knitting the second time through. Mm-hmm. There's a scene where some gravestones are being destroyed by a bombing. And it says one of the gravestones that shattered has the name Benjamin Kubelski, and that's Jack Benny's birth name.
Really? Oh.
So they were making very pointed points. You know, they were...
How about that? Yeah.
Yeah. And then the satire just was, it cracked me up because things like at the beginning, you know, Hitler's walking around and then you see the backstory really quick on why it's an actor who says, I can fool anyone. And a little Polish girl isn't fooled. She wants his autograph because he's an actor.
Mm-hmm.
But yet he fools the entire German army at the end. That's how stupid they all are.
Right, right.
You know, can order people to jump out of a plane, and they just do it without a parachute.
Do it without even, no question. So,
right, exactly.
Yeah, yeah, one of the first moments of skewering Hitler is they're doing a play. You know, you don't really realize that it's a play at the time, I guess.
Yeah.
And, you know, Hitler walks in, and everybody says, Heil Hitler, Heil Hitler. And he says, Heil me.
Heil myself.
Heil myself. That's right. Heil myself. And that was funny. Yeah, yeah, I'm sure like, that got some laughs. Yeah.
Yeah. He gets a laugh. I don't want laughs there, says the director. Yeah. And that's, they had to cancel the play because the play was called Gestapo. Mm-hmm. And it might offend the Germans who just come in. And it's just, the same situation invaded. As Hollywood. And, I mean, he was making a comment about Hollywood there.
He sure was. Yeah. Don't do what's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Even if it's right, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, because your job is to sell movies, right?
Yeah.
Right. So, which is something we see a lot in Hollywood today, even.
Right.
You know, the things that they choose to make and the statements that they make in the movies they make are not because things are, they think, philosophically true or things that need to be said. Mm-hmm. They think that they're... going after the bigger audience, right? That's what the decision is.
Well, yeah. And in fact, we were just talking about this on Monday. My Catholic Women's Book Club was meeting and we read The Keys to the Kingdom by A.J. Cronin, which is the heart of the story is about this Scottish Catholic priest who goes and is a missionary to China. And this is before the Boxer Rebellion and all this. So you get this in-depth look at missionary life and his Catholic nature and all that kind of stuff. And at one point, somebody was saying, oh, they made a movie out of it in 1944. And the book was written in 1941. It was a huge bestseller. They made a movie in 1944. So this is kind of one of those things of, hey, look, it's, you know, The Help or something. Let's make a movie out of it. Gary Cooper, this was his breakout role as this priest, all this kind of stuff. And the person said she watched the movie. And she said, we might all be disappointed because they really downplayed the Catholic part. And we're like, but he was a priest and he was establishing a missionary. She goes, yes, but they hardly mentioned that.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing of nobody wants to see that. We don't want to talk about that, even though it's an integral to the entire book.
Mm-hmm.
Let's change it. And everybody went, why would they change it? I'm like, because what's going to sell to everyone in 1944? Maybe right. About being Catholic, but probably not.
Mm-hmm.
They want to see the stuff about China and his struggles and whatever, you know?
Right.
So it's kind of funny cause since that was around that same time period.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of decisions being made for that kind of reason.
Well, yeah. And as you say, it's not like we're lacking for example today, but that was just, it struck me.
Yeah, yeah. And it is, you know, this is so relevant today.
Mm-hmm.
It just is, you know,
I know.
That's what makes it so good, I think, is, you know, you watch it and you're like, wow, that's really, you know, the statements that they were making back then are the same as today.
Mm-hmm. It's just a different group that's being pointed at.
Exactly. Exactly right.
Which, you know, it's... Okay, I don't, well, you know, politics and stuff, that's not the point. But, you know, Catholics feel it because of the president's healthcare package. which specifically is pointing at providing free contraception, which is against Catholic teachings. And they've made any allowance for Catholics to do that without getting fined so narrow that it's practically impossible to fulfill. And it's styled, of course, you know, the one side sees it as, you know, this is being fair to everybody. This is, you know, contraception. Everybody wants this and everybody uses it and all this kind of stuff. And then the Catholic side's going, well, but, you know, that's not necessary for life. Why do we have to provide it free? Yeah. So they look at it and say, well, you're trying to tell us how to practice our faith.
And that's what it is right there. They're just, that should be the line that was never crossed, and it's been crossed. And, you know, a lot of us are pretty darn uncomfortable.
Yeah. And
you know, because what's the next thing? You know, they always say, you know, this far, no further, but it's a denial of a basic right to live your life as you want. They're saying, well, you know, we need to give this to everybody so that everybody can live the life that they want. But when doing that, they're taking away the life that we want to live.
Right.
And the government has no business doing that.
Yeah, even during Prohibition, Catholic priests could have wine for the consecration for the Mass. Today, would that be the case? I mean,
no, it wouldn't be.
Yeah, and the thing is it's funny because I felt uncomfortable even bringing this up, and this is a podcast with two Catholics in it. And I know that people listen who aren't Catholic, and it's almost like the people in Hollywood back then. You know, it's funny because whether it makes sense to people who don't agree with it or not, what happens is we look at it as it's cutting back on our religious freedom, which I can't even imagine the America where this is even considered. I mean, you kind of reel at it. And yet, on the other hand, everybody else acts like this is perfectly reasonable.
Yeah. And that's the tough thing. It's like, yeah, complete lack of understanding.
Yeah.
Complete lack of understanding.
And it's not like they're saying, let's give everyone free insulin who needs it. You know?
Right, right.
So anyway.
Yeah. And, you know.
So I related to this. Unfortunately, because you start feeling persecuted. You start feeling like we're being picked on because who's the largest group who would care about this? Organized group. Us,
yeah, right.
Catholics.
So, yeah.
And it's funny because I, at the grocery store, there's this guy who works there who he and I always fall into conversation, and he's evangelical Christian. But there are, you know, quite a number of things that we talk about that we completely agree on as Christians. And he came up to me in the grocery store last weekend out of the blue and said, hey, what about this healthcare thing? And I kind of gave him this look, and he goes, that's what I thought. He says, we are all being targeted. And I was like, oh, yeah, it's not just Catholics.
Yeah.
It's all Christians who, you know, hold those beliefs.
Yeah, and how can we not feel that way? I mean, how can we not?
Yeah. Well, and the funny thing was, is he said, hey, your guy in New York, what a guy. Boy, do I admire him. And he was talking about Cardinal Timothy Dolan, who's the head of the USCCB, which is the Cardinal of Catholic Bishops, who's the one who's got to go and have these conversations with people and go, can we all be reasonable here?
Yeah. Thank God we have him, by the way.
Oh.
Because, you know, he's been an American voice.
Thank goodness.
And, yeah, he's really enjoyable to listen to. He's excellent.
Well, and which makes me think of two things, because one is that, you know, John Allen just came out with a book a few months ago about him. Do you know about that book?
I did not, huh?
Yeah, well, I'll have to give you a link to my review of it because it's really wonderful. It's kind of like a Q&A type thing.
Oh, wait, no, you sent that to me. I have it.
Okay.
Yeah, when you said Q&A, then I need to get it read.
Okay.
That is the one you sent along to me, isn't it?
I don't know.
You sent me a Q&A of Dolan.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, because I also lent it to our deacon who met him, actually ran into him in the Holy Land. So it was, it was a real odd coincidence. But anyway, the thing is that, you know, he was not even on anyone's radar to be the head of the USCCB. You knew that?
Yeah. Maybe? Yeah.
Yeah. That usually when one person retires, which was Cardinal George from Chicago, the second guy.
Yeah.
Now, the vice president or whatever.
Just kind of automatically moves on up.
Automatically moves up, and he was elected, and everybody went, what?
Yeah, no, it's not going to work out right now. Yeah, I feel like
he was put in place for a reason, because that Q&A book, John Allen said, basically, I want to show the other face of Catholicism. People are just used to people saying, no, 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 you can't do this, you can't do that. But here's a guy who's, he holds the line, he understands the faith, but he's a bridge builder.
Mm.
He understands how the other people feel, and he wants to be reasonable and try to explain it so everybody understands we can do these things, but we can't do these. And the whole book provided to me such good examples of how you do that. And now I look at him, and it's like you say, he's an American voice standing up, but always trying to go, well, I thought we understood each other. How did this happen?
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
You know, so...
Yeah, and on this... this whole healthcare thing, I believe he was involved with that. He actually have a meeting with the Obama administration. I don't know if he was with the president himself.
He met the president himself, who said, okay, as long as we have your assurance that abortion and contraception are not part of this. And he went, yes, you have my word. I believe.
Yeah. Quotes, but, I knew something like that had happened, but I didn't know it was, you know,
and
that
then he went
extent.
To meet with them.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, okay, well, I think we can come up with a compromise that will make everyone happy. Are you sure? Yes, we'll be okay. And so he came away going, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And then the compromise was basically, we'll wait for a year to put it into effect and change nothing else. You have that much time to change your...
Yeah, that was a chilling letter, you know, and how they cannot realize how chilling that was to read basically that... You have 1 year to change your views on Catholicism.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that blew me away. I'm reading this. I think the exact sentence was, you have 1 year to comply.
Yeah.
We're in the United States. You have 1 year to comply.
I know.
Unbelievable.
And it's funny because that guy in the grocery store said, you know, this is like, okay. And I'm not saying this about President Obama. I'm just telling you the feeling that people suddenly have of helplessness in the grip of a greater power. The guy at the grocery store said, I feel almost like this is those early years after Hitler took power and they suddenly started adding all these new rules and everybody let it roll over them because they thought this isn't that big of a deal. He promises nothing else will happen. He goes, I feel like this is what we've come to because of that.
Mm.
And I couldn't say no. And I, you know, I don't want to compare President Obama to Hitler. That's not what I'm going at. But it's that feeling of, well, it's you just feel kind of persecuted. I don't want to sound like I'm paranoid, but, you know, I feel
well, I mean, what, there's no paranoia anymore. Anybody who says, you know, I saw, you know, conscience protection and things were no-brainers. You know,
right.
But about in President Obama's first year, there was some conscience protection that was trying to be placed into a bill. I think it was introduced by a Utah senator, and it was rejected for something that they were doing. And I was like, "What? You know, what is the logic there?" And then here we are, you know, a few years later, and. And this, you know, so they're just not interested in that. They either don't understand it. I don't know what it is, you know.
I agree. Because this goes along with that speech that the president made, a speech or a statement, I'm not sure which, 2 or 3 days ago about the Supreme Court considering Obamacare as being constitutional or not. And he made some sweeping statement of, well, if they don't agree with this, then, you know, they're just going over their mandate, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, does he understand how this sounds? Does he understand he's basically pitting one branch of our system against the other? I mean, it was kind of like, it was just, to me, that was chilling. I was like, wow, you really can't see the other side at all, can you?
Yeah, that's rough.
I mean, and you know, and he could have been posturing and all this for his side and all that kind of thing, but it was kind of sounding like he was laying the law down.
Hmm.
So, anyway.
But yeah, I haven't really been paying attention to the news kind of during Lent, but what is the status of that? Is it still before the Supreme Court?
They've all argued their sides, and, mm-hmm. you know, the justices asked their questions of both sides very, very pointedly, and, mm-hmm. you know, as they do, as they should. And but I think they didn't have a good feeling from the fact that the president came out and said this thing about, they'll be overstepping their mandate. And I was like, how can you even say something like that? That's not for you to say.
Yeah.
That's not your job or your business, and you sound like a bully.
Yeah.
I don't know how you meant to sound, but it wasn't presidential to me. You know?
Huh.
Anyway.
What's happening?
It kind of brings me
And then just like, I don't know. There's a lot of things in the Republican Party that I'm very extremely disappointed with too.
Oh yeah.
But you know, there needed to be some kind of a better candidate in that group of people.
Yes, there did.
So it's just
well, I think maybe what this points up, although we're picking on one particular issue that is mm-hmm. quite important and for a good reason as Americans and Catholics, but what it points out as Catholics in general is that you can't belong to a political party wholeheartedly if you're a real Catholic.
Yeah,
if you really truly believe what the church believes, there is no party on earth that fulfills all those things.
Mm-hmm.
You have to look at all the issues and figure what's the most important issue, and that's what you have to look at your candidates based on and vote based on that. I mean,
yeah, and that's why, you know, boy, we're really getting into it here, but when the Catholic bishops came out during the last presidential election,
mm-hmm.
and all but said, you need to not vote for President Obama or mm-hmm. for a candidate Obama at that time.
Mm-hmm.
I was so uncomfortable with that because I could easily see how a person could decide that the war that was going on was something that was very important to them to get stopped. And for a Catholic to come to the conclusion that that is the most important thing for them during that last election
mm-hmm.
was valid. And why have the bishops telling them, well, this is the order of the things that you need to be concerned about? I felt like the bishops shouldn't have done that.
Really?
I really did.
Because I felt like, see, here's how two Catholics who agree on so many things can then suddenly go, what?
Mm-hmm.
Because I really felt like, well, finally, somebody's got the guts to stand up and say, abortion is a greater sin than this war. All these people were born already. They all have, they're alive. They're making their choices, however they're making them.
Mm-hmm.
These unborn children have not even had the chance to draw one breath. And that's what they were basing it on. I mean, when you look
at history and all that kind of thing. That is absolutely true. And it is absolutely there aren't words for, you know, how big a tragedy that is.
Yeah. It's a
no-win situation. Yeah.
Yeah, and I understand the validity of what you're saying completely. Because what happens is, I think Americans and Catholics have got a problem with this. We're so independent
mm-hmm.
that we forget, and the church has abused, you know, their do this, do that, and everybody just did it without thinking. You should never do that. You should always say, like you were saying, well, wait a minute. Is the war a greater thing than this? Are they valid? But, you know, so many people look at that, I think, and do this knee-jerk, well, they're not going to tell me how to vote.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got these, I've got these friends who are very much people who pick and choose what they want to believe in the church.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, this is an issue that if you're not comfortable agreeing with it, then you need to look back more at what are the basics of our faith. What, you know, you've got to start digging in. And because if you can't agree on abortion being a problem, then naturally you don't understand the contraception question, which is what the whole argument with President Obama is based on.
And I can, and you know, to be fair, at this point in history, the Catholic bishops, in my opinion, were correct. Mm-hmm. And he poses a bigger threat. The whole Obama administration and the whole way of thinking, it's a bigger threat now if he gets reelected, because he's not going to be worried about reelection.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I guess what I'm trying to express is that I can understand why someone who's got, you know, a son or somebody over there fighting in the war would come to the conclusion to vote basically to end the war, is, you know, what Obama was saying back then. He hasn't done a great job of it, I'm just saying that there are valid reasons to have voted either way in the last election. And, I don't know. I felt awkward having bishops say that at the time. I really did. But at this point they were correct, because although they didn't say specifically what has happened here, it sure turns out to have been definitely a threat to religious freedom.
Yeah, it's that slippery slope, you know.
Right.
One big step and then one little step, and it's easy to attack contraception because what difference does that make? And it, if you're Catholic and understand the way it all hooks together, then you do get it.
Well, it was interesting how everybody, even liberal Catholics, jumped all over that one. Because even Catholics who think that the whole contraception thing is wrong, you know, they came out and said, no. You have to let people live how they want to live. You know, everybody was unanimous, you know.
Yeah, and then I was so
disappointed
great.
when Obama came out and he made that compromise, which is basically, well, they'll get it for free now.
Yeah.
That was the compromise. Once he made that compromise, a lot of the liberal Catholics said, okay, I'm satisfied, which surprised me because, you know, that
because
really wasn't.
They were looking for an excuse to do what they wanted.
Mm-hmm.
Which all of us fall prey to that for one reason or another. I mean, whether it's that reason or some other reason, we all are tempted to, I'd rather have it like this, even though that's not what I should do based on my faith, which is the reason we have confession, because of the times we give into it. But it kind of, actually, to bring it back to the movie, it kind of goes back to when Maria Tura has been asked to spy for Hitler. She says, well, naturally, it's all very attractive and interesting, but what are we going to do about my conscience?
Mm.
Well, if you don't have a properly formed conscience, that's how these things happen.
That's not a part of the equation. Yeah.
Yeah. It's poor catechesis, to use the Catholic words for it, which is bad, incomplete teaching about what the church teaches and why.
Mm.
You know, and a lot of Catholics who are, you know, thinking that, oh, I understand all about being Catholic, well, they're just kind of letting these things slide past them.
Yeah. Yep, I can't argue with that at all. You know, it's
no,
just,
and
I don't know.
You know.
Yeah,
we all have things like that. I mean, and I don't mean to sound like I'm just pointing my fingers at those people, but that's a huge issue. That's, you have to have giant blinders on to miss some of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I'm constantly having my eyes open to, like, things about keep the Sabbath day holy. What does it really mean? How do you live it? Well, how many of us go, like everybody in America goes, well, you know, that's, I try, but it's the third commandment.
Mm-hmm.
It's before honor your father and mother and don't kill anyone. But none of us take it seriously.
True.
So it's, and people listening will go, oh, well, that's not the same as abortion. Well, that's up before you shall not kill.
Mm-hmm.
It's because it's about our attitude to God. We all are constantly forming our consciences and understanding more about our faith and how do you live it. I didn't mean to bring it to a halt with all this, but
no. It's amazing that this movie brings all this up.
Isn't
because it? Because it is. It yeah. is. You know, it's a comedy, and it is funny.
It's, I mean, really, it's very funny, you guys.
And, but what it's about, and the history of it really makes it more important, in my opinion. For this thing to have come out in 1942, mm-hmm. really, really struck me. And
the fact that there's this resonance now, you're right.
Yeah, and then that there's this resonance now. And it's very well written and very well acted.
Oh, it's so brilliant. Yeah. Oh, and the acting.
Mm-hmm.
It's broad where it should be broad and subtle where it should be subtle. And,
Yeah, I'll never forget to be or not to be. And then
and him looking.
Guy gets up and leaves.
Yeah, and he just stops and starts shouting the following words at him as he leaves.
Yeah.
Oh, somebody walked out on my soliloquy. Yeah, or the stuff about the beard in the office, you know, mm-hmm. with Sylvans. What was that guy's name? When Jack Benny's kind of trapped, he's impersonating the professor.
Oh, yeah, Sobolitsky or something like that.
Yeah, and he's Sylvetsky, I guess. He's... And he's like, oh my gosh, they put me in here as a trap. What am I going to do? You know? And the whole thing with the beards and then the people coming in who don't know that he's gotten away with it. And it's just one thing after another that's like, you're like, no, no. But it's so funny at the same time.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Right.
But I was thinking, you know, because I was thinking, the thing is there may be some very broad comedies that deal with social issues people want changed. And the one I could think of that I haven't seen that I don't think is quite as broad and is more maybe like this is Thank You for Not Smoking or Thank You for Smoking.
Hmm.
I don't know if you've seen it.
I've heard of the movie, but I have not seen it. Huh.
I've heard that it's about somebody who gets hired by the cigarette companies and he goes around and does, I don't know.
Yeah. Seminars advertising or something. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was wondering if that was a similar sort of an idea.
Yeah, maybe so. Maybe so.
Or even, I know that a lot of people looked at Juno that way.
Mm-hmm.
Which I found is not nearly as good as everybody thought it was, but I think a lot of people don't watch indie comedies, so it was good enough.
Sure.
But it did make a strong statement about, you know, here are the options for having the baby and what it brings to other people.
Uh-huh.
Instead of having an abortion.
Right, right. Yeah, and I have not seen Juno either.
And actually, yeah. I've heard, and I guess, again, Rose, who keeps up with movies so much more than anyone else I know and thinks about them pretty deeply, the latest movie by the writer of Juno, Cody somebody, I think, and the director, is it Jason Reitman? I'm probably butchering all this. Sorry, everyone. You can look it up, you know. but it's got Cameron Diaz as the woman who cannot leave high school behind her.
Mm-hmm.
So she's young adults, maybe it's called, something like that, fairly recent. And it kind of, it's making a point about the way people need to quit clinging to their youth and start growing up and acting like grownups.
Hmm.
So it's not talking about a huge issue like World War II.
Yeah.
But it is talking about an issue that I think is a problem in our society. So I just think it's interesting that this person is kind of addressing a lot of these things and doing it through comedies.
Yeah, and Thank You for Smoking. I'm looking on IMDb right now. Was done by Jason Reitman as well.
That's what I thought, too. Mm-hmm. He seems to be drawn to these things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and fascinating,
Yeah, and Up in the Air I really liked, which sometime, if you know, depending on movies that we pick, we'll do that one too. And that was looking at a different kind of issue, not as broad maybe, but how do you connect with people? Same thing.
Right, right. Yeah, cool. Looks like I got some movies to watch.
Diablo Cody, maybe that's the writer's name who did Juno. Yeah. Okay. Anyway.
Yeah.
I guess
Diablo Cody, that's it. Yeah.
Yeah.
What an interesting name.
I
Diablo Cody. Yeah.
I know. Well, and it sounds like...
she wrote the screenplay for The Evil Dead, which is in pre-production.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's what it says.
Well, she also wrote, oh, this was a travesty of a movie.
Juno, Jennifer's Body.
Jennifer's Body.
Mm-hmm.
And which I can't really recommend. We watched it because the ads were good enough. And Rose was like, oh, I found it amusing. But, you know, I didn't find it that amusing. But evidently it was written as a comedy in the studio at the last minute, got cold feet and went, wait, let's make it more like this. And so they just kind of butchered it and threw it together and put it out. And it was not what it could have been.
Oh, that's
so
rough. Yeah,
I could see it. Yeah, I could see where. but yeah, that. Anyway, it's kind of, I don't know, maybe there are movies out that are as good at as this and making their points, and people can certainly bring them up because I just haven't seen them. But this movie was really amazing, I thought.
Yeah, I did so too. I really liked it. I would good. Love to do it on stage. That would be so cool.
Oh, yeah,
I mean,
that's right.
I don't know if a script exists, but that would be neat. Charlie's Aunt is one that we'd like to do. Charlie's Aunt, which Jack Benny did in 1941. I have seen that movie. Mm-hmm. And the movie was from a play.
Okay.
So the play existed first, and the play was pretty old too. It's about an actor who is going to be playing a woman in a play. So he puts on this costume and there's he has a friend who wants to have some girls in his room. But they can't do that without a chaperone.
Oh,
so this guy into being the chaperone. And then he ends up having to play that part for the rest of the movie because, you know, so he's Charlie's Aunt for the rest of the movie.
Kind of like Some Like It Hot.
Yeah, I guess so. You bet.
You've seen that, right?
I believe I have, yeah. It
I
sounds
believe
familiar
I
to
have.
Me.
Oh, you're breaking my heart.
Some Like It Hot.
Yeah. Tony Curtis and Jack Lemmon.
Oh, yes. I have.
And Marilyn Monroe.
Yes, I have.
Billy Wilder
right.
directed it.
Yeah, no question. Yeah.
Yeah.
For some reason, I was thinking some kind of an 80s movie when you said that.
But, okay.
But
yeah.
No, but the, yeah, I have definitely seen it.
Well, this says, since I leaned heavily on Wikipedia, this says a stage version opened on Broadway in 2008. So there must be a script out there for you because it German
2008
script, stage adaptation was done in 88. Yeah, so
that'll be interesting to see what they put in there if they just wrote it in 2008.
I know. Did they keep the whole thing exactly as it was?
I'll find
that would
it.
Be interesting.
It will be interesting. That's one of the things, you know. I live in a small town in Idaho. I've said that before. So when we do a play, you know, we're not usually doing modern stuff because all the modern stuff is really uncomfortable. We're almost always looking for scripts from, you know, like this. This would be perfect. This would be perfect.
Well, and I guess can you do things like get the script or whatever you have to do for it and then look at where it's different and fix it?
Well.
Are you allowed to do that?
It depends. On the script, some of them are strictly forbidden, like a Neil Simon play.
Oh,
says
right
in there, don't be changing stuff in this play.
Right.
Yeah, and so it depends, and a lot of the stuff is in public domain. Well, I don't know about a lot of it, but you know, we usually get the scripts from a script provider, and then we pay royalties.
Because I feel like you could just kind of get a transcript of this movie and use it and start directing.
Yeah, if it was public domain. Yep.
Yeah.
I don't know if it
is.
And
it may not be.
Yeah. I don't understand the rules for public domain on movies, because I thought Casablanca would be public domain, but it turns out it is not. What was that, 1939, I think? But
was it
not,
that early?
Was it? Okay. I thought it was, but maybe I'm wrong.
I thought it was 42 or 43.
Okay, let me call it up.
Well, it doesn't matter. I mean, it's close enough. It's the same. It's very long
ago. Yeah, 1942. You're right.
Okay.
I would have thought that would be public domain, but it isn't.
Yeah. Thank you, Sonny Bono. We appreciate that.
Yes. What does he have to do with it?
I know you're dead, but I'm...
He was in the Congress.
He was in Congress, and he pushed for this law that extended the time of the copyrights were kept in place, and it kind of and it got passed because everyone went, sure, Sonny, and everybody like me who reads books or on, you know, aloud or whatever goes, what? because the way it was progressing then was every year and another, you know, like when this 2012 opened up, you should have had like the stuff from 1926 coming up. Yeah. You know, like it was this long ago, so now this stuff is in public domain. Mm-hmm. It was just a time period. And so as time marched on, more things came out of copyright and into public domain. And unfortunately, it's all frozen at 1923 now for like 50 years or so. I mean, it's it's ridiculous. And I'm so annoyed at him. And every so often people start petitions to change it. But, you know, how are you going to get Congress to look at this? No one wants to push it. And there's no Sonny Bono in there to push things and change it back. Mm-hmm. Unless I run for Congress, in which case,
things will be different.
Thing on the contraception, and then
and nothing but good movies allowed to be produced.
Yes, and be sure that To Be or Not to Be can be produced on a small stage in Idaho. Done.
That's right. Fantastic. You got my vote.
Oh, well, okay. Then it's a lock.
I love it.
Well, I don't know how much we've talked about the movie. We've certainly shown that it's still relevant today.
Yes,
I guess.
And it sure is. Go see it. I mean, or actually, you know what? I found this one hard to find. Once I found it, it was easy to find.
Oh, okay.
But it's not on Netflix.
Okay.
But I found it on Hulu. If you go to Hulu.com, you can watch it for free.
It's streaming there. Okay.
Yeah, and the DVD is out of print.
I just rented it from the... We have this, maybe I've said, this wonderful independent video place. It's, you know, every year it's Best in Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
They have every foreign movie you'd ever want. All these really old classic movies. Mm-hmm. And if you want a movie that's out and they don't have it, they will order it for you and put it in stock. Cool. I mean... They're really amazing.
They beat Netflix this time because Netflix does not have it. Netflix is where I go for everything.
If I lived in a small town in Idaho, I'm sure I would too. Yeah. And actually, if I lived more than 5 or 10 minutes away, but you know, it's just about 5 minutes the other direction for me. So I just go over there.
Nice.
And support my independent video store.
Nice, nice.
Yeah. Yeah, I was wondering if it was going to be a problem, so I'm glad it wasn't.
Yep. Hulu.com, and you can just stream it.
Yeah.
At no charge.
And you were mentioning when we were kind of chatting just for a second before we started, there was this audio thing you'd heard on Bogging Heads.
Oh, yeah. And it's interesting to have listened to that.
It's sort of a conversation.
It's relevant to this conversation. Our friend Jesse put it on SFF Audio, so I'll put a link to it on the show notes. But it's called The Right Show, and Right is W-R-I-G-H-T.
Oh,
it's an
okay.
episode of The Right Show, and I have no idea what the fella's name is, so I'm going to call it up here.
Possibly Right.
Yeah, well, that's one of them, but the guy he was talking to was the one that was...
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and it's calling up here. It's a book about religion and politics, which we just talked about. Let's see.
Yes,
there it
did.
Is. Okay. The book is called The Righteous Mind: Why Good People Are Divided by Politics and Religion. And the book is written by Jonathan Haidt, H-A-I-D-T.
Oh, okay.
So this is an interview that lasts maybe 70 minutes between... Robert Wright and Jonathan Haidt. Yeah, I'm not sure how you pronounce it. Sorry, very sorry for butchering that. And they're both professors, it seems, and they both have written books kind of in this. Now, both of them come from the perspective that everything is evolutionarily created. So religion is something that evolved, and, you know, if there's not a reason... everything has an evolutionary reason. I mean, we've all met people like that, and both of these guys are like that. So if you like the color blue, there is a reason evolutionarily why, you know, the blue was some kind of a advantage
a key
in the past.
To something.
Right. So
I would be highly insulted if I were married to one of these people, by the way. I'll just say that right now. But
right.
Go ahead.
So but the guy has written a really, really interesting book from you know, judging from this interview. And he talked about the difference between liberals and conservatives, and I was talking about how there's, you know, six things that people are concerned about, and conservatives tend to be concerned about all of them, while liberals have a very limited number of concerns. And, you know, just watch the interview. It's very cool.
So it kind of explains the emphasis of one mindset versus the other, and yeah, I guess. So.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. And he talks about groups, groupishness, you know, and how we tend to group together, and a religion. He broadens the definition of a religion to, he says politics is a religion. Yeah. So, I mean, but you'll see his definition of what a religion is. Cause the other guy says, well, that's not a religion. He says, yeah, it is. This is why, blah, 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 blah. But it was a fascinating thing. And one of the things he said, you know, he's talking about how liberals and conservatives don't understand each other.
Yeah.
And, one of the interesting things he says, and the guy is not a conservative, but he said that conservatives can understand liberals better than liberals can understand conservatives because of their areas of concern. Liberals have a specific area of concern, and conservatives have that same area of concern plus other areas of concern. So the liberals can't see these other areas as being concerning, whereas the conservative can see the liberal concerns plus their own. You know what I'm saying? So
that's very interesting.
And it was very interesting. And he says, you know, things happen like when you get into these groups, and this, you know, I definitely believe is true, is once you get into this group, there are things that happen in groups that are not logical. have, he called it, there's
like
a
mess.
There's like a layer of this fanaticism that goes with a group where they're ignoring facts in order to support their groupishness.
Kind of thing.
Exactly. So to support your groupishness, you're ignoring things that are factual. And he says, and that's how you get things like allowing a teenager to select their own abortionist, for example. He says, you know, would you let, he said, I would not let my kid pick their own orthodontist. Yet they're saying that they can go get an abortion without parental approval. Mm-hmm. And he says, you know, that is so far out there that, you know, things like that happen in this layer of fanaticism.
Yeah, because the emphasis is put on the wrong thing altogether.
Right. They're for the group. These people are protecting their group. And they're not looking at facts. And, you know, of course he says it goes, you know, if you're talking conservative and liberal, you know, both groups do it.
Because people do it.
Right. And that's what he's saying. That's his point. Yeah.
When you look at people, and I was just sitting here and thinking, actually, I guess that's one of the things which I believe I've said before, I'm so grateful to the Catholic Church for.
Mm-hmm.
Because just when you think you're kind of settled into this comfort groove on pick a side, whatever side, they yank you out of it. You're super comfortable with maybe immigration and all this kind of stuff, which would be the more liberal, classically liberal, or classically in the last few years anyway, concerns. And the church goes, no, you have to care about abortion more. Mm-hmm. Or you're super into the pro-life thing, and that's not an issue. And they're like, no, I'm sorry. You have to help the illegal immigrants now. Because guess what? They're here and they need help.
Yeah.
You know, so it's, and those are just the issues that struck me off the top of my head. There are better examples probably for the liberal side, but that's the one I get hit with, the death penalty, something like that, that's more equivalent. But you're not allowed to stay in that comfort zone because Christ does not allow you to stay in that comfort zone. We're not here to be able to sink into a groove like mindless people. We're supposed to think and use all this stuff for, I hate to say it, what would Jesus do? But, you know, that's kind of where the church is always trying to interpret everything.
Yeah.
You know, and so you're not.
Yeah, and you know, I'm probably going to get hammered for the stuff I said in this podcast, but...
Sorry, guys. There you go. I can't help it. We're Catholic, and we feel this way. And if we feel this way, and if you guys are all about fairness, who don't agree with us, what's fair?
That's right.
Said. Sorry.
But no. And, you know, it's just, you know, things are so complicated right now. And I don't think that they can be made simple. I think, you know, every person's got to make these decisions. So I think that's what I was getting at when I'm trying to say that, you know, to be told by the church that, you know, you need to do this. I mean, there are things that we need to be doing, but there's, you know, everybody's got this priority list, I guess, is the only way. If you sat down and you dumped your mind out and you're saying, well, these are the things that are important. The thing is, it's all important. And I can understand why people can come up with lists of priorities that are in a different order. I guess that's what I'm trying to say.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. And well, and I can also understand that, but I think as a general statement, Christians, and especially Catholics, have the duty to think about, well, no, I guess all Christians, I don't care if you're Catholic or not.
Mm-hmm.
Our duty is to try to always see where God wants us to be. I mean, if we really are put here to be here on this earth in this time, our soul was created because God wants each one of us to be here, loves us, and everything else. We're here to do something, even, you know, take care of our kids, whatever it is. But the way we live our lives and the decisions we make and the priorities we have all come from that, come from our being made in the image of God. And so when the church comes out and says, well, here's what you really need to keep in mind, they're trying to help us order our priorities in the way that we should. So we should at least take it seriously enough to go, wow, but I really want this thing. Well, wait a minute. Let me at least investigate. Mm-hmm. And I guess my problem is that I don't have a problem with you saying that, and because a thoughtfulness is needed by each person. Because when we aren't thoughtful individually, is when you get abuses in the church. Because not only is it the divine bride of Christ, but it's made up of all of us flawed people, including the bishops. But we have to also go, it's an authority that we have to at least take notice of. So when they come out and say, here are these guidelines, and we're not in line with those guidelines, we have to stop and evaluate more than going, well, no, I don't agree with that. Well, my son's in Iraq. You know, I mean, you have to not just do the knee-jerk thing.
Yeah. Well, that worked.
That's my problem.
That worked for me then, because if that was the purpose, I definitely thought about it a lot.
Yeah.
There's no question. And I did come to the conclusion that they came to. I did not vote for President Obama, but I guess I'm just saying that I can understand why a person would have, because of the concerns that were going on at that time.
Yeah, and I have friends who are, it's funny because I have this little Catholic book club. There's not that many people in it, but they're super diverse. And so it's funny because I have one friend who is definitely struggling with all that stuff, kind of reevaluating and looking at what does the church teach, what does she believe politically, and all this kind of stuff.
It is tough to be on a different side.
And struggling. But see, I guess my statement was made more actually not at people like you or my friend or anybody else who already wasn't thinking, this is a huge priority for me, and wow, oh, wait, the church, I better think about this. I have friends who, I'm not kidding you, said to somebody I know, like within a few feet of me, if you don't agree with President Obama on the contraception issue, you're racist. At which my friend, who's much younger than I, went, what? What? Why? How is contraception racist? I don't get it. And I went, see how far we've come, people.
Yeah.
They didn't.
Well, I think we've touched on both rails today. It's like,
yeah,
bringing up Hitler and bringing up racism are the ends to most arguments, it seems
the
like.
The controversial thing. Yeah, and my friend, who's younger than the two people who were doing this, who were in their 60s, and were saying things about, you know, well, I've marched in the civil rights movement. She's like, yes, ladies, but that was a long time ago. Here's where we are right now.
Mm-hmm.
Here are the issues of today. And I keep forgetting that President Obama is black. You know, he's just the president.
Yeah.
Well, isn't that what Martin Luther King Jr. would have said?
That's what we want. Yeah.
You judge him by the content of his soul, not by the, or his character, I think is what he said, not the color of his skin. So, but the thing is that it's that knee jerk reaction. It's that, oh, well, here's my label. Here's who these people are. And here's who I am. I'm not going to think. And there are plenty of people on the other side, believe me. I'm not picking on that. That's just the example I had, to where these people are the ones that, when they heard the bishop say that, immediately got really angry and considered not coming back to church. Well, is that the right reaction? Your reaction is more honest.
Yeah, my reaction was annoyance. And right. I did look at it all, you know, and it did make me think about it. So I guess I can say that they succeeded. But I guess I'm just saying, for a person to have come to another conclusion seems valid to me. And for them to maybe feel guilt over that, I don't know. I guess that's what I'm, you know.
I think, yeah, from my point of view, I would say I do have friends who are very thoughtful and who did vote for President Obama despite that one issue.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to judge them on that. That's their call. Yeah. They are thoughtful. They did weigh it. That's not my – I can only take care of myself and tell the truth as much as I can and love
right. And that's something, too, that you know, we all need to do better. You know, we all need to let everybody – like you said, we've all got our stuff. You know.
Well, yeah, because I think I've said this here before, but maybe, you know, I came from a point of view as from an atheist background where I completely agreed with abortion.
Mm-hmm.
I completely hated the death penalty as somebody who came from Kansas with conservative parents. So I had to do a lot of struggling myself over those various issues because, well, wait, they're telling me what? So I understand the annoyance, but I understand the having to think about it and having to go, crap, it's all logical. It makes sense. I hate this. But I have to go along with it.
Yeah.
So I can't judge those people who are thoughtful and thinking about it and choose differently than I do based on what they're thinking and their prayers and everything else. That's not my call. But my call is to say, don't have a knee-jerk reaction, whichever side you're on. That's just plain wrong. That's not living your faith the way you're supposed to live it, despite what a lot of people would like to think about Christians.
True. Yeah.
So.
Very well put.
Sorry for the rant.
Nope. That's excellent.
So. Good stuff. Thank you for bringing the issue up enough for me to go, well, now, wait a minute. I really didn't mean to come off like I was going, well, how dare you think about it?
Yeah.
That wasn't it at all. Or people not choose the same as me. That's, you know, we all do the best we can. If we're doing the best we can, that's all we can ask.
Right. For certain. For you certain. Know? Yep. I agree.
So.
I agree. So, yeah, go see this comedy.
Okay, you guys, I am really sorry. I really did not mean to go to all these places. I thought I was going for something light.
It's where the movie brought us, so that's good stuff.
I looked at In Bruges. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I said, wow, let's go for a lighter movie. Sorry.
Yeah, there's a lot going on in the world, isn't there?
Yeah, well,
I think
that's
going on in the world.
It's not that the movie makes you sit there and think about this stuff. It's later, if you're going to have to talk about it, you think about this stuff. So.
Do you ever listen to Dan Carlin?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
He
not his 4 hours.
Another thing that Jesse posted is a 2-hour hardcore history from Dan Carlin that just came out about the ethics of the nuclear bomb.
I just downloaded that.
I have not heard it, but it's just like, oh, wow. You know, after that Blogging Heads one, these are heavy, heavy issues. So,
well, and after, it's funny because Dan Carlin suddenly went off on this tangent of doing these multi-part things that are so long. And this, he had a 4-hour podcast. And I'm like, yeah. I'm even an hour at a time. I just don't care that much, yeah, you know. Yeah. So I was thrilled to see when Jesse said, this is more the old style. When he started off and said, you know, some of the interesting questions he'd ask and think about. Because he'll go all over the board.
Yeah, yeah. He's kind of amazing.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, the controversial episode.
That's right. Enjoy. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you're still with us.
Well, yeah. You know what? We have to be able to talk about stuff.
Yes, we do.
And we all have opinions, so there you go.
Right, right. So what's coming up next time? What do we got?
Oh, good. Something else
Oh, I'm so depressed.
Flannery O'Connor.
All right. So, yeah, a good man is hard to find in other stories.
Yes.
We still haven't talked about how we're going to talk about that, but we'll do that within the next week, I imagine.
Yeah.
Because we certainly can't talk about every story. So
I started reading the stories. And I was pleased to see I'd read a fair number of them based on, you know, my book club choosing some. So, yeah, I think the thing with Flannery O'Connor is you kind of have to remove yourself a step and not get so invested. Because then when you see these horrible things that happen to some of the people in the stories, you just otherwise you get too upset.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's not. Yeah. That's not helpful.
Right. Right.
But, so then...
Then we'll get lightened up, right?
Yeah? I think so.
Yeah, we're going to talk about Star Trek. Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan.
Khan! The most famous screen.
That is going to be a hoot. That is going to be a hoot. And we're going to have someone with us that time.
Oh, yes. A guest.
Right. Heather Ordover. A very special guest. Yep, go ahead. Or Heather Ordover. Right.
Craftlet.
Tune in for that. That'll be fun.
Why are we all emailing? Oh, because she got involved in the question of Jane Eyre. Should men read Jane Eyre? And I have to say, I've never had so many long email conversations with a variety of people about that question.
Yeah, that was neat. That was cool.
The YA heroine question.
A lot of fun.
So she was there, and she was like, I want to play. Especially one who's an English teacher and knows about all that stuff.
That's right. And we're going to talk about Star Trek.
Yes, we will.
Which is fantastic.
Well, what was the connection? Her brother Star Trek books?
Yeah, the editor of the Star Trek book line.
Yeah. There's some fun.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah. So.
Very nifty, very nifty.
Yeah, so that'll be fun.
It will be a good time.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
out of politics.
All right. Well, have a great couple of weeks, everybody. We'll see you next time.
Yep. Bye.
Bye-bye.